to proclaim your words today. Help me, your Lord, to proclaim your words today.
Yeah, dear listeners, welcome to 91 FM. As I have mentioned before, today in the studio, we have Father Hollenbach SG. Father, you are highly welcome. Can you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Good afternoon, Melanie. I am Father David Hollenbach from the United States, from Boston College, the Jesuit University in the city of Boston in the United States, where I am the director of the Center for Justice and for Human Rights and International Justice. And I am here conducting a workshop sponsored by the church here for people from different parts of South Sudan. And it is a pleasure to be with you, a very great pleasure. Thank you very much.
Okay. You are all welcome again for the second time. And as you have heard, our Father said that he's here facilitating in a workshop organized by CRS in collaboration with Solidarity. Father, can you tell us what are the challenges of human dignity that may face the new state? As a new state, we know that we have different challenges, and from your long experience working as an international facilitator, can you tell us what may face us in form of human dignity?
Well, it is a tremendous privilege to be here in South Sudan as you begin the existence of your new country. I congratulate you on the creation of the new Republic of South Sudan. And one of the things that seems to me to be a really important challenge you face echoes a problem or a thought that I have drawn from one of your most distinguished intellectuals here in South Sudan, Francis Mudding Deng, who during the war wrote a very important book called Sovereignty as Responsibility. And in that book, he spoke about how being a sovereign nation means being responsible for the people of the country, to protect their human rights, to secure justice for them. He did this when he was writing in relationship to all the internally displaced people in the existing Sudan in those days when it was still north and south together. All the IDPs, the internally displaced people, were not being protected by the government, and as a in Khartoum. And he wrote this book calling on all the nations of the world to protect their own people, including the internally displaced that were Sudanese at that time. Now, here in South Sudan today, you have a new country and you have a new sovereign nation state. You are now responsible, its government is responsible for the protection of its people, for the securing of their human rights, for enabling them to become active participants as citizens in a new country, for their dignity as persons to be respected and protected and energized through participation in social and civic life. So I think one of the great challenges that you are facing here in South Sudan today is how, as you create a new nation, as you have created a new country, how the activity of people will be respected and how their dignity will be secured by the government and by the citizens working together to do that.
Yeah, the church in South Sudan, and especially the Catholic Church, they really played a very big role during the war. So to prepare the people for the peace. So what do you think the role of the church can be, and especially in this specific time, in the new Republic of South Sudan as an agent of transformation in society where there is some cases of violation for human rights?
Well, Melania, there's the challenge is as a new country comes into existence, the creation of a strong civil society, of strong engagement by people in their communities in various ways through their action as citizens, through their association together in local communities, is where the activity and the agency and the energy of the new country will come from. The church is located in the grassroots with people in many, many parts of South Sudan. working in many villages, working in all the cities, working in the counties, working to try to help people come together in a way that creates solidarity and a kind of solidarity that generates real activity, that people can work together to create the new Sudan, the new South Sudan. And the church is with them, accompanying them, helping them along the way, helping them develop their own education that will enable them to see what the issues are for citizens. So the church accompanying people in their efforts to create a new country, it seems to me, is the most important role the church can play.
Yeah. Father, from what you have said, it means that the church have power to direct its people. Who is responsible to protect the right of these people? Is it the church or the state?
Well, I mean, finally, the most important role for the state is the protection of the rights of its people, the dignity of each person, the fundamental rights of each person to their life, to have enough to eat, to become educated, to seek to become part of the political life of the society. The state, the government, has a very important role to play in that area. The church is not there to do that primarily. The church is there to help people find their way to God, to help people find their way into a deeper life of moral integrity. But part of the relationship with God that each person has and part of the moral life of each person is the pursuit of justice. Justice is an essential dimension of the Christian faith, and therefore promoting faith and promoting justice go hand in hand. They cannot be separated from one another. And therefore, we see that the church is not the primary protector of human rights, but if there are human rights being violated, the church must raise its voice and say, no, these rights need to be protected and truly secured. So the church is there as a help to the people, accompanying the people, and sometimes enabling the people to make their voice heard to places of power, which could then act to secure the rights for them.
Yeah. New state with new challenges. Father, how can the church address challenges of social justice in South Sudan from the perspective of social justice, Catholic social justice?
Well, in many, many ways. It seems to me that on the level of parishes, parishes have important role to play in the very local community and to help people find ways to live together more creatively, to provide educational resources for people through schools. The church does a lot of work in education in South Sudan, and it has for a long time. The educational task in South Sudan is very great, attaining a wider and deeper education for literacy, finding ways to engage in civic education so that people can know what some of the major questions are from their social political life. This is part of the civic educational task of the church. And so on the local level, at the parish, in the village, in the cities, these are important roles. Then the church also has a voice that it can raise on the national level. In Juba, the bishops are present here through their bishops' conference. They can make their voice heard in the parliament. They can bring their ideas about the needs of the people to the president and the administration of the country at that level. Not trying to tell the government what to do, but to try to make the voice of the people heard so that the government can more adequately respond to the needs of the people. So there are many ways that the church can do this, by serving the people, by accompanying the people, by advocating and making the voice of the people more adequately heard. All of those levels are part of the church's mission for social justice and human dignity.
Yes, Father, again, I think the church have a very big role to avoid its people or their faithful not to involve in ethnic division that may threaten the common good. How do you think it can be?
Well, one of the most fundamental beliefs of Christianity, of course, is that every human being is created in the image and likeness of God. divisions between people by race, by ethnicity, even by religion, are less important than the fact that we are all God's children. We are all created in the image and likeness of God, and therefore we must respect each other with the kind of respect that we show towards something that is holy. To think of each person as an image of God, it's a little bit like saying that when I look in the mirror, I see my own face, my own reflection there. But when I look in the face of another person, I'm seeing the reflection of God in that person's face. So the way we treat each other, whether we are of the same tribe, whether we are, I have white skin, you have black skin, whatever ethnicity we have, we are seeing that which is sacred and holy in each other's face. And therefore, the way we treat each other is a way that we relate to God. And that means there should be very, very definitely the church should be contributing to overcoming and eliminating deep ethnic divisions, and certainly overcoming any kind of ethnic conflict that leads to violence.
Yeah, dear listeners, if you open your radio right now, we have in the studio Father David Holin Patch, and he's really facilitating a workshop sponsored by Solidarity with South Sudan and Catholic Relief Services. He's really facilitating about the Catholic social teaching in personal life and society. Father, how can the church respond for the groups of people who sometimes name themselves as marginalized, or they're saying that they are left behind?
Well, the church, first of all, should be there with them, to accompany them, to enable them to know that they are not left behind, that the church is there with them. I know from working with the Jesuit Refugee Service that one of the greatest services that the Jesuit Refugee Service can provide to people who have been displaced for long periods of time, by simply being with them and listening to them talk and tell their story, is to enable people to know that they are not alone. They have not been left behind. So the first thing the church should do is listen and be present with the people. Secondly, once having listened to them, they can express and bring their voice to the public in a way that would enable people to become more active and more engaged with the public life of society, to find ways to overcome the barriers that are excluding them, to overcome the divisions that are separating them from each other. But out of listening and accompanying comes a kind of advocacy that can make change in the society for the good, and to leave people to realize that they truly are not alone, and indeed that they are equal with their brothers and sisters.
Yeah. Father, South Republic of South Sudan is really very rich in form of natural resources and oil. But up to now, we are still have a very high rate of people who are living in poverty. What role can the church play in building the common good for all?
Well, you mentioned the resources here in South Sudan, and the land is one of the great resources of South Sudan. There's a tremendous capacity for agricultural productivity in this part of Sudan, in this new country, one of the most important possible resources for agricultural productivity in all of Eastern Africa. The oil that is present here, a source that could become a genuine source of wealth and growth for the country as a whole, especially for those in the country who are already very poor. The big question is, how will these resources like land, oil, water, other natural resources be used? What will they be used for? Will they be used to enrich a small elite and leave large numbers of the Sudanese people behind in poverty? Or will these resources, whether it's land or oil or water, be used in a way that genuinely benefits everyone, benefits the common good of all? For the common good to be the common good, it has to be there for everybody. One of the deep beliefs of the Catholic and Christian tradition is that the earth and its resources have been created by God for the benefit of all, not just for the rich. So St. Ambrose, one of the earliest fathers, theologians and thinkers of the church, said, for this reason, when you give something to a person who is extremely poor, you are not making a gift to him, but you are giving him what is already his own, because it was these resources were created by God for everyone, not just for those who are better off. So the church has a big and a very important message for the South Sudan, and that is to make sure that the resources that are here in such richness are used to benefit the people, especially those people who are poor, which is the vast majority of the Southern Sudanese.
Yeah. Father, how can Republic of South Sudan avoid oil as a resource for cars?
Some people have spoken of oil as a possible curse, and when they say that, what they mean is that the oil is being used to benefit a small group of rich people, and that they get richer, yeah. And it further divides the society makes the division between the very rich and the vast majority of very poor people even greater. Well, finding a way to avoid that deepening of the division between the elites at the top and the vast majority of people who have so little is really the great challenge of how to deal with oil. A lot of African countries have struggled with this problem. Countries that have oil, like Chad, like Cameroon, yeah. Like Angola, and like Nigeria. And it has not been worked out very well in many of these countries. Perhaps Sudan could be a pioneer in finding ways to distribute the results of the resources from oil in a way that will really benefit all the people and not just a small number of very rich people. That's a huge challenge, and it ought to be a major challenge to the church to keep its voice loud and clear on how the resources from land and products from land and oil should be used to benefit the people.
For those who listen to us, if you want to have your say in this program, you can dial us or call us on 0955-022-550. With us in the studio is Father David Hollenpatch. Father, I think the church is really advocating for human rights. Can you tell us what is the relationship between fundamental human rights and the Catholic social teaching in personal life and society?
Well, as I said earlier...
Okay, Father, I think we have someone online. Let's just listen from him.
Oh, okay, fine.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Hello? Yeah. Can you speak up?
Yeah, I'm listening to you.
Your voice is very low.
Okay, I'll really wait. So, I'm really thankful. I would like to thank you as the presenter for this program that is taking place right now.
Yeah.
Pastor. Yeah, I have just a question. The question is just a scenario. You're watching right now, you're holding. Taking an example, as South Sudan now, right now, is a state of its own. Now, because we have law enforcement, which is the police. Now, in this case...
Yeah, sorry, we are not getting you very well, but you can call us again. Father, you can continue with your answer.
Well, I was going to say that human rights are the most basic foundation of human rights is the dignity of each human person, created in the image and likeness of God, each person possessing a mind and a heart and a spirit that gives that person true freedom. It is part of the person to be possessing of this great dignity that is expressed in our ability to think, in our ability to make choices, and the fundamental rights that are part of each person's existence are different dimensions of that basic dignity. Yeah. For example, the right to free speech, the right to communicate with other people is an expression of the fact that my dignity is achieved in relationship with others, in interaction with others. And my speech and my freedom of communication is a way that I come to express and to achieve my dignity in interaction with others. Another way in which I achieve my dignity is through my work, by working with people, by employment, by having a job that helps me earn a living. And if I am unemployed, if I am left out, if I am somehow completely left behind, my dignity is violated, and therefore my right to attain a decent living is violated. Or if I am starving and hungry, or if I don't have even the basic forms of health care, like clean water to drink. These are threats to my fundamental dignity and worth as a person, and society has a duty to come in and assist us. The government comes in to assist in the helping of everyone to find clean water to drink, water that can sustain their life and therefore sustain their dignity. So these rights are all different dimensions of the dignity of the person.
Yeah. We have another one online. I hope the line is good. Hello?
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, marhab.
Juma.
Yeah, welcome.
Thank you, Father. I appreciate your presence and your contribution.
Yeah.
I have a few questions.
Yeah.
Okay, if you could speak a little louder, it would be easier for me to hear
you. Can you raise your voice? Your voice is very low. Can you raise it?
Very good.
Yeah.
You're
welcome.
One, how do you think South Sudan can eradicate tribalism using the experience of church?
Yeah.
That's two.
Well,
the second one?
What best alternative could you provide to the cattle keepers instead to identify for their own to transform them in order to reduce
And the third one?
The third one is, I'm seeing the disease, the patients are not infected in the followers.
Okay, the line is not good, but let us go for a short break and then I will come and repeat the question for you, Father. Yeah, dear listeners, welcome again in our interview with Father David Hollingpatch. As we have mentioned before, Father is really facilitating in a workshop sponsored by Solidarity with South Sudan and Catholic Relief Services. He's really facilitating about social justice. Father, the line was not so clear, but I was able to hear the question of Juma. He said, how do you think the church can eradicate tribalism and nepotism in South Sudan, and what is the role of the church in the killing which is taking place in one of the states, that is Jonglei?
Well, I know on the tribalism issue, as I mentioned earlier, as we think about the dignity and worth of each person, that dignity and worth is not just for each not just for people of a particular tribal group. It is for us as human beings. And finding ways to help us and the people of South Sudan recognize that they are fellow human beings together, not just one tribe or another, but human across the borders between tribes and between races and between ethnic backgrounds. That's a very important task. The church can contribute to that by helping people see one another as brothers and sisters through interaction in small local communities that are composed of people of different ethnicities and tribes. It can do it by recognizing that when people gather together on Sunday to pray together, they are praying with people from other communities and other tribal and ethnic groups. The church should be teaching about the common humanity of everyone and practicing it, not dividing people in churches by one tribe or another, but bringing them together. This is a huge challenge. It's been a big challenge in my own country for the issue of race, and it is a big challenge for South Sudan on the issue of tribe. And I think that's a big, but the church can play an important role in that to help people recognize their common humanity. That flows over into the conflicts that are occurring in places like Jonglei right now, where so many people have recently been killed because of these conflicts, which are in part a division of ethnicities, in part just a straightforward struggle about power and who has got more power than the other. These are very important issues that need to be addressed through the peacemaking and peacebuilding process that the church can contribute to. We need to find some of the deeper causes of these tribal and ethnic and power conflicts that exist in different parts of the South Sudan now. Find ways to bring people together to eliminate some of those deeper causes, which would be the feeling of exclusion by some people. Minority tribes that feel excluded are likely to become conflict prone and become in raising the dangers of violence. Find ways to overcome those patterns of exclusion and enable all to feel like they are true citizens of one country together. Yeah. That's the real challenge, how to help people see that we are all common citizens together in the one wonderful new nation of South Sudan.
Yeah. Father, from your long experience in teaching and facilitating Catholic social teaching in personal life and society in different countries of around Africa, and I'm quite sure maybe outside Africa, how do you think people can be helped to become an active participant in public life, civic education, and the other issues related to their public life?
This is a very important challenge, it seems to me, for the church, but also for the government, to find ways to enable people to feel that they have a stake, that they really are part of something bigger than themselves, and therefore it is worth the effort to participate in the civic life of society. It means finding ways to provide people with an awareness and an education about what the issues are that they're facing. If we come together in a community, whether it's a village or a city or even at the national level, if we come together in a common effort, what can we do together that we cannot do alone, that we cannot do just in the back in our own families? And there's an enormous amount that can be done if we come together and work together. We can build a city, we can build a village that has a much better form of education for its children. We can work at finding ways to make cleaner water and better education for all the others, all in the city. We can work at developing a more adequate distribution of basic health care for people. All these things that make a huge difference for individual lives can only be done if we work together. And if the church, as well as the government, enables people to see that coming together will actually make a difference, that it will actually make things change in a way that shows them that it is worth working at coming together in that way. This will enable people to feel like they're part of something and they're making a difference. That's the kind of contribution I think that we need to be working at making, both from the church in its efforts at civic education, but also in the government, so that local representatives are with the people and let the people know that when the people come and talk with them, something will happen that makes a difference.
Yeah, Father, again, I think there is some group of people who are responsible about empowerment of people, and especially in keeping the government accountable and resisting corruption. As you know that we have many cases of corruption, not in South Sudan alone, but in different countries of Africa. Do you think that the government can be accountable and the people can resist for the corruption?
Absolutely. It's very important. The first step toward dealing with issues of corruption, of course, is the rule of law, making sure that there is an adequate set of laws that govern the way people handle money in the government, the way in which money is collected from in the government, the way it's distributed, who has charge of it, how do we keep account of it, so that we don't find ways that money is coming into the country from abroad or coming to the government in Juba from people paying taxes without them knowing what's happening to it. So accountability in the use of money is an absolutely essential step, and that ought to be part of, a key part of, the Anti-Corruption Act that I know is under consideration by the government. A second way in which we can be worked toward this is when people see corruption, they ought to be able to bring it to the attention of the officials who are able to eliminate it. There ought to be a way, in other words, that individual Sudanese, South Sudanese citizens can make signs of corruption known to the government. So there should be a listener. The government should be ready to listen to the people about these issues. That if someone in the police or someone in another government office is asking for money in order to give services that should be delivered without any other payment being given, then the people who are being asked to make those special payments ought to be able to tell an anti-corruption office or an anti-corruption official, this person over here or that office over there is not doing its job. It wants bribes in order to do its own work. So being able to tell the government where the corruption exists, it seems to me, is very important.
Yeah.
And then holding people accountable when that happens.
Yeah, our line is still open. You can have your say in this special program. With us is Father David Israel speaking about social justice. Our number is 09550-2255-0, and we have someone online. Hello?
Hello, Father David.
Yes, hello.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. This is Juma again.
You're welcome.
Father David, if you take the statistics of people who visit the church on Sunday, it is more than normal. I mean, churches are always full, which is very encouraging. But what's happening with the faith of people? I'm seeing people don't have a faith, though they always go to church. Is the preaching not transforming them or what? I want to know about that.
Okay.
Very sadly.
Yeah.
What is the role of rule of law? As far as good governance, accountability, and respect for development is concerned. In a situation where good laws have been enacted, but the implementation, people complain the implementation is very poor. What do you think should be done in order to correct that?
Okay, Juma. I hope Father will answer for your question. Did you get his question?
I think I got most of it. The rule of law is extremely important. And, of course, the rule of law means that we have not individual preference to somebody because they are my relative, or they are the relative of someone in the government, or they are the friend of the police officer, but that the law applies to everyone equally. The same law for the rich as for the poor, the same law for somebody who serves in the government as serves simply as a person working in the fields, same law for us all. That's what the rule of law means. It's an expression of fundamental human equality. Now, the way in which we can pursue that, of course, is to make sure there are adequate laws governing the issues that we need to face, that there is the rule of law governing how money is used, that there is the rule of law regarding how punishments maybe for someone who has violated some provision is that the same punishment is distributed to people equally for the same crime. And finding ways to make sure that that happens means having a clear group of people that observe and watch and make sure that there isn't cheating on the behalf of providing bribes for certain government officials, that there isn't a way that the law is being applied to one ethnic group in one way and in another ethnic group in another way. So there needs to be accountability, which means that the people need to be able to speak out when they see violations of this equal administration of the law. And the government needs to be ready to listen and needs to be ready to take these complaints when they are brought by the people to the government, take the complaints really seriously. That's what accountability means, not just having elections, but making sure that people can be held accountable after they're elected, all the way through their service in government and their service in other public positions.
Yeah, we have another one online. I hope the line is good.
Yes,
hello?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Yeah, welcome.
Yes, madam, actually, I'm happy to have that person. Actually, I don't know his name.
Father David.
But I'm happy that the issue of corruption also we share it with the outsiders, as he's one of the eye of the outsiders, and we want to make sure that the rule of law in this country is to be implemented, and then people go on with the new country. Actually, it has been seen that since 2005, we lost a lot of money. And a lot of money now, we don't know where these guys have taken the money and how shall we recover such money. We know them. There are guys who know them. They have put them somewhere. But now, can that money be recovered back by the government through rule of law? And then those guys are liable of paying that money back. That's my question.
Okay, what is your name?
That is Dao Manyop.
Okay, you're welcome, Dao. Father, I hope you got his question.
Yes, I did get it, and I think I did. Well, it seems to me if money has disappeared, that has been brought into the country or paid into the country, then there should be a genuine investigation by the government to say, where did this money go? How was it used? Who is responsible for it? Where is it now? That means there are investigators, whether they are prosecutors from the government or certain lawyers that are appointed to be part of an office of accountability on the use of funds. The government should be investigating this kind of thing. When someone knows that someone complains that money has been disappeared that should have been used for the benefit of the people have a right to complain about this, and the government needs to investigate it, holding the people who had the money given to them to oversee using it for the people, holding them accountable for what they did with it and finding out where it went. And when they find out where it went, get it back, bring it back. That's the money. The money, if it's been raised for the benefit of the people, the money belongs to the people. It doesn't belong to the government officials who are supposed to be administering it on behalf of the people. So that's the big challenge about finding ways of setting up an accountability structure within the government itself. And there are all kinds of ways to do that that have been pursued in other countries, and South Sudan could easily create such structures itself. It could challenge some of people who would prefer to keep things quiet, but it's necessary to keep these things out in the open and not keep them quiet. And finding a way to make these things known, whether it be in the government or through radio programs or in various other ways, is a crucial way to make sure that we don't try to hide money that's disappeared.
Yeah, fathers, we have mentioned before that our church in South Sudan, they really have power because people put their trust on them. What role can the Catholic Church play, and especially at the moment time, informing a Christian life for all the denominations we have in South Sudan and also our brothers, the Muslims and non-religious group?
Well, creating a genuine brotherhood and sisterhood among people is part of what Christian faith says our life should be. We are called upon to love our neighbors as ourselves. This is part of the Christian belief. It's also truly part of the Islamic faith that we should be, that all persons should be seen as brothers and sisters together. Finding ways then to bring people to an awareness that that teaching is more fundamental than some of the divisions that have divided this country by ethnic group or tribal group and by religious convictions. Religion is really important. I really deeply believe in my own faith. But I also think my faith means I am brothers and sister. I am brother to my Muslim brothers and sisters. I am a brother to my African traditional religion practices, those who practice African traditional religion. That's my faith that teaches me that, because my faith says love your neighbor as yourself. Love those who are, even those who are different from you, as yourself. And so my own faith leads me to that. So the church should be teaching that vigorously. The second way the church can promote that is by truly bringing people together, whether it's in ecumenical associations or in interreligious groups that where Christian and Muslim and African traditionalists work together. The church is not just a place where ideas are talked about, but it's a place where people work together and live together in common community. And we're finding that the church's participation in these interreligious and ecumenical groups can be an extremely important contribution to national unity as well. So I would urge, I think that that's one of the key ways that the church can contribute to overcoming some of the divisions that have been a part of Sudanese life for too long.
Yeah, Father, as an institution for the church or a radio for the church, some people are telling us and advising us, we supposed not to discuss political issues. We're supposed to talk about health, to talk about education, to talk about HIV/AIDS. We don't have a right totally to discuss about political issue, and especially our current political issue. Do you think that the church has a role in public and political life?
I certainly believe very deeply that the church has an important role in public life and having an important role in shaping the direction that the country moves. This is true whether it's South Sudan or my own country of the United States or any other of the countries of the world. That's different, though, from saying that the church should support one political party and not support another political party.
Yeah.
There's a difference between saying this candidate is the one to be voted for and that candidate should be voted against. That's not what we should be seeing from the leadership of the church. I think the church should not be endorsing supporting one political party or one political candidate. But if the church says the government has to be accountable for the way it's using its money, that's different from saying I'm in favor of one party rather than another. That applies to every party, every government official, whether they're from one group or a party or another. So holding people accountable in that way and saying the government has a responsibility toward those who are poor, that applies to every political party, not just one. And so there's a difference between being involved in the public affairs of a complicated in a society and speaking out on behalf of justice and human rights and peace and caring for the poor. That's different from being supportive of one political party or one political candidate. It has a certain political dimension to it, and it can be part of the process of living together as a country, that these issues become part of the political agenda. And so the church should be making its voice heard on how these concerns about justice and human rights and the poor and peace building are worked out in the political sphere, but without endorsing one party or one candidate.
Yeah, Father, again, can you tell us or highlight us about the role of the church in peace and reconciliation, forgiveness, and especially in our current situation?
Well, this is a very challenging question. The church deeply believes, of course, that reconciliation between people who have been in conflict with each other is a very important way toward the future. Finding ways to overcome the divisions that have divided people from one another, whether it be divisions between Arab and African, or division between Muslim and Christian, or division between those with power and those without power. These are all very important wounds that need to be healed. Now, how do we go about doing that? It seems to me that, first of all, we have, wherever an injustice exists, if you're going to find a way toward for genuine reconciliation, we have to work, first of all, to make sure that injustices are stopped. You can't say somebody should forgive an injustice if the injustice is still going on. You have to stop the injustice. If someone is group is being excluded from having an adequate say in political life, the first step toward reconciliation is to overcome the barriers that are preventing them from being involved in political life. So justice first. Reconciliation can follow from that, and forgiveness can be necessary in some circumstances. Forgiveness means, first of all, at least once injustice has stopped, there will be no revenge for past injustice. No revenge. So don't say, this person treated me badly, so now it's my turn, I'm going to treat him badly. Forgiveness at least means saying, no, I'm not going to take revenge. I'm going to live with him or her as a brother or sister now that the injustice has stopped. So finding a way to take the step toward reconciliation after injustice has been brought to an end is one of the requires a step to say no revenge.
Yeah.
And then finally, it seems to me that once we see that no revenge is in the next is after that, we can see now at long last, perhaps we can live together as people who care and learn from each other in a community together. And that's where we begin to get reconciliation of drawing people together into a new community.
Yeah.
Where we restore bonds between people with each other after they have been once we have overcome the injustices that have destroyed those bonds in the past. So restoration of community after the injustice has stopped is another way of thinking about reconciliation.
Yeah, dear listeners, our line is still open. You can have your say, or you can have your word or your question in our line, which is 0955-022-550, and we have someone on line. Hello? Hello? We lost that caller. Father, I think there is a need also for you to tell us what are the steps the church can take to implement what we have been discussed.
Well, as I said earlier, there are a number of steps that the church can take. One of the steps I think that I like to speak about is the church as an accompaniment of the people, the leadership of the church, the members of the church, being with each other, especially those who are in some way hurting or poor or deprived, being there with people. Secondly, we can take the step of trying to serve the needs of those who have special needs in our society, the sick. The church is very well known for its work in healthcare, building up hospitals, clinics, and so forth.
Yeah.
This is a very important step. Another step to be serving the people is education, whether it's through formal education in schools or through informal education in parishes in a variety of other ways. Third, the church can be an advocate for people. The leadership of the church in parishes, the leadership of the church in a diocese like here in Juba, or the leadership of the church in the whole country, like the bishops' conference, all the bishops together, can be a genuine advocate for the people, advocating on behalf of them in the public domain, trying to help create public laws and public policies that will keep people accountable and avoid corruption, that will help create steps that would make the accountability in the use of land and oil, taking steps to make sure that there's an adequate educational system and so forth. And finally, the church can be a source of gathering people together so that they can take control of their own lives, to take a form of development that not just the advocacy of one group for the others, but enabling people to come together to live better together through their own development and their own common life together. The church can facilitate the creation of communities in which people can be truly responsible for their own lives. So all those levels, I think, are ways that the church can be contributing to justice, human rights, dignity, and peace in South Sudan.
Yeah, Father, as someone who is advocating for human rights, I think there is a need also to give message not only for the church leaders, but also for the citizens, as well as for the officials of the government. Yeah, last message, because we are reaching our...
Okay. Well, I mean, I would say the thing that I believe most deeply as we look at the new reality of this great new country of South Sudan is that this new country belongs to the people. This new country is not Salva Kiir's country. It is not the country belonging to the SPLM. It is not the country belonging to the government in Juba. This new country belongs to the people. It is the people's country. In my country, the United States, we speak about a democratic society, society as one that is government of the people, by the people, and for the people. So South Sudan is a country of the people. It is organized by the people, and it is there for the people. And so it seems to me that the church has a very important role to help the people know that this is their country, and that enabling them through education, civic education, through education that leads to basic literacy and programs for children, enables people to become citizens, to become active citizens, and to recognize I'm South Sudanese. Not just I'm Dinka or I am Nuer or I am Shiluk. I am South Sudanese. I am a member, I am a citizen of this great new country. And as a citizen of this new country, I have a lot to contribute to this country and its future. Its new country will contribute a lot to me as well. So it's back and forth. I contribute and I receive. I give in to the enabling the community to grow, but as the community grows, it helps me grow as a person. That's what it means to be a citizen of a democratic and free society. And my hope would be that as the South Sudanese country government is formed and the new constitution is written and the parliament begins to develop its standard ways of acting, and as the people begin to pay attention to what's happening around them in the new country, that this kind of mutual accountability of the government to the people and of the people's contribution to the creation of a unified country will go forward. I think that's one of the things that the church hopes for in South Sudan, and it's one of the important contributions that the church can make to the new South Sudan. I will be with you in prayer that this is something that can move forward. I share your great delight at the new country that you are creating, and it is my deep wish that it will be a very successful process in the months and years and even decades ahead. So I say God bless South Sudan, and may it be a great and successful country.
Okay, thank you very much, Father David Holimpachi. Dear listeners, up to here, we have reached the end of our program. As I have mentioned, Father is here to facilitate a workshop sponsored by Solidarity with South Sudan and Catholic Relief Service. And the purpose of this program, or the aim of this program, is radical transformation. We are all called upon to transform our own personal lives, our community, our environment, the whole society, so that we can build a society where there is justice and respect for human rights. And it was me, Melania Ito, behind